Hi, have you missed me? Book at bedtime. This is a book about great things about life. And here's the next part. It starts on page 74. Harold and Maud. A 20-something young man with an obsession for death, and a woman pushing 80 with a thirst for life. They meet, they fall in love, they end up in bed together, you know, the typical rom-com. It's a film. Harold and Maud was released in 1971 and was a commercial flop, but in the nearly 40 years since, actually longer than that now, and it's been elevated to a classic status. The US Library of Congress selected it for preservation in 1997. If you have never seen the film, then get off your backside and do so soon. It will change the way you look at life. If you have, then you're probably smiling right now at the thought of it. The next nice thing about life is having your child fall asleep in your arms. If this has ever happened to you, then you don't need to tell them. You don't need me to tell you why it is in this book. I think having anyone to fall asleep in your arms, being that safe, that relaxed, is wonderful. Helping lost tourists. They are just so disproportionately grateful when you do. It's as if you have saved the life of their firstborn or told them they have won the lottery. You can almost forgive them walking too slowly in front of you with their day glow rucksacks and taking ages to find the correct change when you're behind them in a queue to buy a newspaper. I once told a man from Singapore which train station to get off at, and he proceeded to take a photograph of me, noting down my address, and once he got back home, he sent me a thank you card and a copy of the photo. Obviously, slightly nutty, but heartwarming nonetheless. A decade or so later, he probably still tells his neighbours about this lovely, helpful Englishman and shows them my photo on his mantelpiece. I wait to see if I am remembered in his will. Oh, God. Honesty boxes. Tomato plants left outside someone's house. A charity bookcase at the train station. Eggs for sale on a farm. Honesty boxes are left beside these and many other such examples in the expectation that you will pay for the items you take. The person selling the plants or books or eggs trusts you to leave the right money. Did you notice that word? Trust. Watching the news nowadays, you'd think there was no such thing. But all over the place, people are trusting complete strangers to do the decent thing and to pay for the items, even when there is no one there to see them do so. And that warms the cockles of your heart, doesn't it? Honey. Honey is a miraculous substance but we tend to take it for granted. Well, I would like to suggest to you that you take a few seconds to ponder quite how amazing it is, actually. Here are some of the things you might not know about honey. And even if you do, they're worth reading again. It is the only foodstuff that doesn't go off. You can keep it forever. Pots of honey were found in Tutankhamun's tomb and they were still edible. To make 1 pound of honey, bees will have to travel over 50,000 miles and visit as much as 2 million flowers. A beekeeper in Somerset has perfected a system to get bees to make honey straight in the jars. I'm not making this up. Honey changes flavour depending upon the flowers the bees visited to make it. The darker the honey, the stronger the flavour. The ancient Egyptians used to pay their taxes in honey. The Paris Opera House has a hive of bees in the roof and their honey is on sale in the foyer. And honey is the only food eaten by man that is made by insects. The medicinal qualities of honey have been known for thousands of years. Professional singers still take honey to keep their throats healthy. It's also full of antioxidants and contains traces of a wide array of vitamins and minerals. Nature's sweetener is good for you. I might even go and get a spoonful after I've made this recording. I wonder if my voice needs that. Hotel breakfasts. Not the room service ones. They cost more and you get a finite amount. I'm talking about the breakfast buffets at the restaurant. Typically these comprise a range of fruit juices, yogurts, cereals, muesli, fruit salad, croissant, Danish pastries, toast, cold cuts, bacon, sausage, beans, scrambled eggs, hash browns, tomatoes, black pudding, mushrooms, and tea or coffee. And here is the thing. You can eat as much as you want. Take a plate, fill it up, and go back time and time again. Go about the task properly, and you won't need to eat again for the rest of the week. Hourglasses. I like these too. Watching time drain away, grain by grain, should probably be depressing. But the thing about an hourglass, and the reason they are a wonderful metaphor for life, is that when the sands run out, you can turn them over and start all over again. Just don't forget to take your egg out of the pan, or it will be overcooked. Well, that's not an hourglass, that's a 3-minute timer, unless you want an egg like a bullet. And now, as well as honey, I fancy a boiled egg and soldiers. We're on to letter I now. Aye. Ice cream. There are a few problems or emotional crises there are few problems or emotional crises that a tub of ice cream cannot fix. The rejuvenating properties of ice cream are technically and medically non-existent. But if that is the case, then why do we feel so much better after eating some? Ooh, I've even found some that's lactose-free. Very nice. A dairy-free Ben and Jerry. Oh, yes. Right. The origins of ice cream are steeped in mystery and largely lost to time. Most of the great civilizations appear to have had their own version of iced desserts and treats. The ancient Greeks served snow mixed with honey, and the Persians would use ice to create sweet confections. The Emperor Nero had ice brought down from the mountains to freeze his fruit drinks, and Alexander the Great was said to be fond of an early version of the dessert. The Indian subcontinent has been home to the dish kulfi for hundreds of years. Modern mythology suggests that Marco Polo brought back the idea of ice cream from his visits to China, and that it was why Italy is so closely associated with the dish. But there is actually no evidence for this. But in the UK, there are accounts of an iced pudding being prepared for Charles I by his chef. So impressed was the king that he paid the chef a huge salary to keep the recipe secret and only serve it at royal banquets. Again, this cannot be verified. In all likelihood, numerous forms of iced dessert or sweet developed at different times in different places as refrigeration became cheaper and more commonplace. We entered the modern era of ice cream when it became a popular treat for all classes. Fascinating fact. We have Margaret Thatcher to thank for Mr. Whippy. The young Iron Lady was part of a research team that pioneered a way of increasing the amount of air in ice cream, thereby making it softer and able to be served by a pump machine straight into the cone. I like to call it a cornet. Ooh, another icy one. Ice hotel. Some creations are so fantastical, so unlikely, that you can't really believe they exist. The ice hotel is one such place. It should be the stuff of fairy tales. A vast building with many rooms constructed completely of ice and snow. But it is a real place. At least it is for 6 months of the year. It melts away in the spring and is built again from scratch as winter approaches. The company behind the original ice hotel in, Yukkoslavi, northern Sweden, started out as a summer tourist operator, offering various outdoor adventures for travellers. But in 1990, French artist Jeannot Deriet was invited to house an exhibition in a purpose-built igloo in the Torne River. It was a huge success, with visitors coming from all over the world to experience art in this young, unique setting. Excuse me. One group of tourists decided to stay overnight in the igloo gallery, and the idea for an ice hotel was born. Nowadays, the modern hotel continues to combine the concepts of art and snow, with sculptures and artists from around the world invited to design and create the many rooms. Visitors are welcome to walk through those rooms during the day to admire their work, but at night each room becomes a private sanctuary for its guests. Lying on an ice bed covered in reindeer skins and snug inside a sleeping bag. The architecture and features of the ice hotel change each year, although some elements remain constant. There is always an ice bat, mainly an ice bar, I should say. Sorry. Mainly serving vodka because it's low freezing point. Everything else would just be solid, I suppose. Anyway, as well as an ice church at which hundreds of couples have been married. I didn't know that. At times, the grounds have included an ice theatre in which Shakespeare's Macbeth was performed in the Lapland language of Sami. And an ice cinema. Fascinating fact. The roof of the ice hotel is strengthened with a mixture of snow and ice called, cleverly enough, snice. The interior of the building stays at a constant -2 to -4 at all times due to the insulation the snice provides. I remember it being on in a James Bond film. An ice palace. And then it all fell to bits when a big laser thing melted it. That was it. One of them nearly drowned or something and he had to jump in and, Anyway, I'm digressing. Back to the book. Ice Pops. This might be a British thing, I'm not sure. A hot summer's day. A trip to the newsagent's. Delving in the ice lolly freezer. You pull out a 12-inch plastic tube full of neon orange frozen juice. As long as you can consume it without getting brain freeze, then you're in for a treat. I think I used to like the red ones. Raspberry. IKEA food. Unless you're under 10 and still allowed to play in the bit with the plastic balls, the cheap and plentiful grub is the one redeeming feature of a trip to IKEA. Even the most miserable of kids or begrudging of husbands can be enticed to endure the traffic queues and labyrinthine trek through flat-pack furniture with the promise of a plate of meatballs at the end of their visit. I'm sorry, I haven't a clue. A new series of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue is greeted with such a cry of joy throughout the land that it's probably registered on the Richter scale. This irreverent, slightly disorganised and repeatedly rather rude radio quiz show is a highlight of Radio 4's schedule and has built an international following, a huge international following. It began in 1972, and the original lineup comprised Tim Brooke Taylor, Joe Kendall, Graham Garden, and Bill Oddie on the teams, Barry Cryer, and Humphrey Littleton. It would take turns to chair the show. Early in its life, Cryer and Willie Rushton replaced Kendall and Oddie as panelists, and Humph became the regular chairman. But since Willie Rushton's death in 1997, a number of part-time panellists have sat in the spare seat, and the most regular being comedian Jeremy Hardy. The concept, is really rather simple, with the teams engaging in a variety of parlour games, many of which have been slightly tweaked for comic effect. The show's popularity came combined wit of the players as well as the winning comedy formula that has become routine over 35 years or more of its life. So Humph will always introduce the teams with a not very thinly disguised insult, acted vaguely disinterested in proceedings throughout the scorer, Samantha, will be subject to some of the rudest and most blatant innuendos you will ever hear before the watershed. And the pianist, Colin Sell, will be roundly ridiculed for his musical prowess. Most listeners are hooked after one show, and the programme is now seen as a national treasure. I think we're good at those as British. One programme that's on the TV that's very similar, I think, is Would I Lie to You? And that is hilarious. I watched that only last night. Somebody was doing an impression and it was hilarious. Anyway. Innocent smoothies packaging. Why more food manufacturers don't give you something interesting to read while you're sitting at the breakfast table is beyond me. Cereal packets could have short stories or, wait for it, serialised novels on the back. Who has time for that? Source labels could easily sneak in a haiku or two. So full marks and a round of applause to the nice people at Innocent who plaster their packaging for their smoothie drinks with enough reading material to last at breakfast. So you may find instructions on how to empty a carton onto... So you may find instructions on how to turn an empty carton into a cress head, play spot the spoof ingredients, pickled onions and rubber ducks, anyone? Or you could always look at the base to be told, stop looking at my bottom. Packaging with a sense of humour, designed to inspire a smile. Now it's almost the weekend, so this next one is good. Inspirational movies. I think I'm going to have a movie weekend this week. The American Film Institute selected the 100 most inspiring films of all time back in 2006. The top 10 were 1. It's a Wonderful Life, 1946. 2. To Kill a Mockingbird, 1962. 3. Schindler's List, 1993. 4. Rocky, 1976. 5. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington in 1939. 6. E.T. the Extraterrestrial, 1982. 7. The Grapes of Wrath, 1940. Oh, yeah. 8. Breaking Away, 1979. 9. Miracle on 34th Street, 1947. 10. Saving Private Ryan from 1998. I think if you're in a sad mood or an uninspired mood, listening to music or watching a film, watching any one of those 10 would actually leave you feeling better. It could actually change your mental attitude for the day. So remember, everything's not shit. Sleep well tonight. Good night.